CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Inkstud Show, the radio show where we talk about comics. And it's a lovely day here in Vancouver, quite sunny and not quite chilly yet, thank goodness. Our guest today is Mr. Ivan Brunetti, and where you are, I'm figuring the weather is quite the opposite.
The opposite? Well, it's not too bad today. It's winter, but... there's some sun kind of coming through the clouds.
How cold is it getting there right now in Chicago?
Well, it was pretty cold yesterday, but during the day, I mean, it kind of changes drastically here, like from day to night. So I never pay attention to the weather. I don't believe in the weatherman. I never listen to a forecast because I don't care.
Well,
so I just sort of look out the window and kind of guess.
Do I need a jacket?
Yeah, and in Chicago it changes all the time anyway. Like sometimes like within the span of an hour, it's totally different. So
I remember I was supposed to have Chris Ware on last summer. I think it was last like a year and a half ago. And, like, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, tornadoes were coming down, so we had to, like, postpone.
Oh, yeah. We did have that, yeah.
Tornadoes out of nowhere? So, I guess I'll just jump right in. The main reason for having you today is the wonderful new collection, an anthology of graphic fiction cartoons, I should say, and True Stories, Volume 2. Stupendous follow-up to the first volume.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Well, as someone that collects far too many comics for his own good or his own bookshelf's good, there's a lot of stuff I don't have, which I'm always looking for.
Well, that's good. I mean, the thing with these collections is that they really are geared more for people that are not familiar with a lot of these, you know, cartoonists and their work. So, you know, the people that are into comics are going to have almost all of it, or, you know, if not all of it in some cases. But, you know, the thing is, those people have already been converted to comics.
So
I feel like the point of a book like this is to introduce the art form to, you know, people that are not going to be familiar, even with things that you and I would, you know, think our old hat or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, at the same time, then the challenge is to still make it interesting for people like us that are very familiar, you know, with the world of comics, and that's why I try to put them in an order maybe that might be interesting or a little unexpected, or maybe get people to look at them a little bit differently. I don't know, that's kind of the challenge. Is I know that people that are into comics are going to buy this book and then complain that they have most of it. But, they're not the primary audience. You know, in fact, a lot of the work in both volumes, I mean, was culled from existing anthology like Raw and Weirdo and Kramer's Ergot and
some of the
guys.
The SPX Expos. Some of those.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of, you know, that's the thing. It's like, I'm sort of like making an anthology of the anthologies.
Well, this one, I guess, and I've noticed, I've kind of looked through some interviews, and one of the big focuses is the younger folks, the new generation of cartoonists, which I think is quite interesting because a lot of the really impressive stuff coming out right now is coming from a lot of these people who really aren't yet in those anthologies yet. And
exactly.
You know, it's... Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, and that was kind of the challenge with this, too, because in the first book, I felt I had some responsibility to kind of, like, look at the history of this art form and, you know, kind of stick with things that have been proven for the most part. Although even in the first volume, I threw a couple of younger people in there that hadn't put out a ton of work yet, you know, just because I liked it and felt you still need to kind of mix it up a little bit. Otherwise, it looks like it's a dead art form. And in this second volume, I feel like I had a chance to do more of that. And, you know, it's always riskier because you don't know what's going to happen with people's work. But, you know, so I just tried to pick stories that I know that I like, and these are cartoonists that I like. And, you know, there's a lot of new stuff that is not in there that you know, I wish I had another 400 pages, but I'm going to leave that for a younger, more energetic person to put together like another anthology, because there's so many of them now, and there's that Best American Comics, and I feel like that's the perfect place to kind of document what's happening year to year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and my book was more about I hate to say embalming what's going on, but it's a, you know, it's not a yearbook, so it's kind of like looking at the whole history of things. But you know, at the same time, I you know, I want to show that it's still a living form. So I did want to put some young people in there that hadn't been published much at all. I don't know, just kind of try to make an interesting book, basically, something that I'd like to read.
Yeah, it seems like it's there is a pantheon of, you know, set standards that everyone kind of goes, here, you should read this because, you know, this will be a good way of getting into comics, the entry drugs, the mouse and the ghost world. But the things that a lot of people are putting out right now is really quite interesting, and I kind of see it as like really, I guess, pushing that next level of comics.
Oh, I agree. And in fact, you know, like the choices that are in that book were, you know, I chose them like a year before, you know, we went to the printer. So, and it was printed, you know, like, what, 5 months before it hit the stores. And, you know, there was, you know, several months, 6 months of production work. So if you really think about it, like, it's already out of date by the time that book comes out. There's all this new stuff that has come out in the meantime, you know, but then you have to go back and, like, add things and repaginate. And I was kind of pushing the limit with the 400 pages. So they're by no means complete representations of everything out there. I think that's impossible to do. I mean, in fact, they're limited to, you know, North America just to keep it focused, because, you know, you could do several more volumes on just what's going on in the rest of the world. With similar types of books to that one. And I mean, that's actually good to me. Like, that's a good sign. There's just so much out there that actually is worth documenting that, you know, maybe it's going to take another 10 or 20 years before people can step back and do another book.
Yeah.
That's, you know, kind of similar to this, where it's kind of looking at what's happened since right now. There's just this explosion, I think, of people doing comics. Just this morning, this young cartoonist up by my office where I worked just to show me what he was working on, and you know, he got an advance to do a book about Bill Ayers, actually, former weatherman. You know, like, when I was you know, that age, like, there was nothing like that out there. Like, you can, it wasn't a comics publisher, it's a book about teaching.
Yeah.
And you know, they wanted to do it as a comic, and they thought their primary audience was grad students that are like in educational training. It's such a different world. Like, when I was doing comics when I started, like, nobody cared about this stuff, you know. I mean, and now, like, you know, you can start out thinking like, well, I can go to a publisher and get an advance and work on this book for a year, and it's not even like a traditional comics publisher. And
no,
I mean, I think it's just a very different world for cartoonists now. So we're going to see a lot of different kinds of work, and I think it'll take, you know, 10 or 20 years to kind of sort through it and see what's going to last.
Well, I guess that's one question. Looking through some of the new cartoonists, how do you tell who's like a flavor of the week, like, or who's going to stand that test of time? Like,
you know, I'm probably a flavor of the week too, you know. I had my moment in the sun for a few years, and now I'm just like a has-been, so I'm not the best person to judge. I just go, like, you know, I like this story. I think it fits well within a certain section of the book, and then I you know, so part of it for me is, like, how's it going to fit in to the book? Because there's a lot of things that I like that I just thought would be really difficult to format, or, you know, it would sort of break the flow of the book, and I wasn't sure where to put them in there. And that's not just with new cartoonists. I mean, even the old stuff. I mean, I wanted to do something with Tijuana Bibles and things like that, but it was just kind of difficult to find a place in the book where that wouldn't just be kind of disruptive to the flow. So there's all those kinds of concerns, too. It's not, you know, necessarily, I mean, we're, you know, and nobody knows who's going to be the, you know, whatever flavor of the month, or keep going. I mean, some of the people that are in the second volume, like, literally only had a couple of pages printed ever, and that's not just new cartoonists. There's a couple of pages from Weirdo where it was done by people like we've never seen anything else by them. But I feel like, gee, that stuff was burned into my brain for more than 20 years now, you know.
Yeah.
So who knows? I mean, you can do a page that might be great, even if you never do anything else. So
I can think of many folks like that.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of, you know, it's not like I'm a Merlin the magician over here.
Yeah.
It was just kind of an intuitive thing, like this, I think this will fit the book. Something about this story kind of stuck with me, and I think it'll fit okay in the book. And then that was kind of what I had to go with. And like I said, in the meantime of making those choices, there's like all this new stuff coming out that complicates things, you know, because like, oh, I wish I had 10 more pages, or, you know, and it can be like this never-ending book if you start letting all that stuff, you know, it's just too many influences going on. So at some point, you just kind of have to make a decision, like, okay, I'm going to stick with these, I'm going to put them in an order that I think is interesting, and then, you know, at that point, you just put it into the world and hope people like it.
Well, let's talk about the order, like, not necessarily specifically, you know, page by page by page, but one of the big things, you do a couple like really nice, smaller strips, by like some of my favorite folks like Sammy Harcum and Chris Ware. And then you get into eventually, the Harvey Kurtzman thing. Now, last, book it was, Charles Schulz. And what about Harvey Kurtzman, is so important to you in this volume of having, I guess, the spotlight?
Well, I mean, he's one of my favorite cartoonists, just like Charles Schulz. One of the reasons I became a cartoonist. And that's ultimately, I think, what it comes down to. But if I was going to get specific, I'd say I think Harvey Kurtzman kind of was a nice bridge between, like, this older tradition of this kind of anarchic, almost surreal kind of anything goes humor.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some, you know, the strips just before his section kind of embody that spirit. At the same time, you know, he was, without him, you know, there wouldn't have been an underground comics movement, and then there wouldn't have been an alternative comics movement. So he kind of like bridges those things. And, you know, in some ways he's tied to this more anarchic spirit, like iconoclastic spirit of comics. But then, like, you know, I didn't represent the war comics in there. It's really hard to reprint things from EC Comics. But, you know, he's also, like, kind of like one of the first, like, really serious cartoonists, I guess you could say. I mean, there were some before that in the newspapers, but with comic books, there weren't, there wasn't anyone like him before him. And, you know, he kind of also set up a model, I think, for the way you could do things and the kind of things you could address in comics that was expanded upon by the underground generation and then even further by, you know, alternative comics of the 80s and 90s from that. So, I just felt like he tied things back to a certain tradition and also opened the way to, like, a new tradition. So he was kind of an important figure to me.
He was very hands-on in the process of making comics. Like, from what I've read, he would be very specific, like, in when he's editing something, like with Mad, how the page layout exactly has to happen, how the timing
has
to work.
He's a cartoonist through and through, even if he's not drawing. It's like his vision.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's interesting, like, I think in Comic Art magazine there was some sketches by Kurtzman, and then there were like some finished artwork by Jack Davis. I think it was in the Art Spiegelman section, I can't remember, where he talks about those, and it, you know, one is beautifully illustrated by Jack Davis, but there's something like that's, I don't know, more artistic, more aesthetically pleasing about those sketches by Harvey Kurtzman. Like, there was just, he's a cartoonist through and through. He's not like an illustrator of comics. Like, he thought in comics terms. I don't know. I mean, even though he probably thought of himself as not being able to draw well enough to carry this stuff through, you know, when I look at his sketches, they're so amazing. They're like just beautiful drawings. And you wonder sometimes if he really himself could see like how beautiful his artwork was. He's kind of a tragic figure.
Yeah.
Too, so, anyway, somebody's knocking on my office door. I don't know who it might be.
Why don't I do a quick song break? And
yeah, this is weird. Nobody knocks on. I haven't
I think this happened last time, too.
It did, because I'm always at work.
Okay, so I'm going to play one of the songs you requested in the order requested. Maybe when we get back, we'll a little bit more about Kurtzman, and we can talk about the songs.
Okay, I'm just, yeah, let's make sure it's not an emergency.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, I'll talk to you in a second.
Okay.
Thank you.
CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Inkstud Show, and we're talking with, or I guess I am talking singular, with Ivan Brunetti, before we're interrupted by the door. And
I'm sorry, I locked the door here in my office, but and the last time you called me, which was a couple years ago, I was in a cubicle, which was worse because my boss came to talk to me while, you know, it was during my lunch hour, but still people interrupt you, so... anyway, my foibles of every day.
I always leave my work when I'm on my lunch hour because no matter what, someone's going to want to talk to
you. It's not so bad now. I have a new job now. I'm teaching full time. I was working as a web person, web maintenance guy when you called me last time. But now I actually have an office with a door, but people still pound on it.
So what are you teaching?
I teach like the introductory level drawing course, like drawing one, and the introductory 2D design course, and I teach a cartooning class. And then next semester, I'm teaching editorial illustration. There's a graphic novel course that I'm teaching, and you know, fundamentals of 2D design. So kind of like these foundation level courses, mm-hmm. and cartooning and editorial illustration is a lot like cartooning because I think of it as like kind of often telling a story with the drawing or having a point of view. So it kind of is related, I think, to,
Oh, completely. It's there. Yeah. I mean, I think Ralph Steadman is incredibly influential on cartoons because of a lot of that stuff he did and a lot of other folks whose names are escaping me right now.
Oh yeah. But there's a lot of different things I can cover in that course. So, mm-hmm. Should be fun. Hopefully.
Now, is this your first semester doing this and going into the second, or?
Right. This is my first semester teaching full time. So it's been pretty overwhelming. But before this, I was teaching part time and working full time, you know, I'm working on the website for the college that I'm now teaching for. So I thought like I'd have more time to draw, but this first semester here, it's been like 60 hours a week. Working, so we'll see. It'll probably get easier after the first year. That's what everybody tells me.
No, it's all about figuring out your syllabus and how to work within it, I think.
Yeah, and I'm trying to take like what I do in my classes and apply. You know, I don't want it to be separate from my other work, you know. So like the little cartooning book that I did a year ago.
I was going to mention that. This sounds like what you did with the comic art magazine.
Yeah, that was basically my, you know, years of teaching that class, and then it just turned into that book. So even with these like introductory level courses, which are really difficult to teach, because you know it's college freshmen, and you're getting them to look at drawing and design in a new way that they're not really used to looking at. You know, I want to kind of take what I've been doing in those classes and try to articulate it a little bit better, and then maybe do a book that's kind of like my personal aesthetic history or something, because I have no art degree. I've never studied art. I was an English major, and I don't even have a master's degree. I have a BA in English, so I'm not really qualified to teach art, I guess. I'm just basing it on my own experience from doing it. So, like everything I talk about is just from my, you know, my own discoveries of that I can't, you know, came upon by just working and doing it. So,
well, along with this book is you're also very focused on learning from others and seeing what's worked for other people. Your own kind of personal, I guess, intellectual academic pursuits. Is that a good way of putting it?
Sure. And actually, you know, I always think of like these Yale books in a weird way. They're like they're still autobiography for me. they're very personal. It's stuff that I have a personal attachment to that was important for me. And like a lot of times it is, you know, you're looking at comics that made me want to be a cartoonist or that taught me something about cartooning. So I'm hoping that kind of comes across to the reader too. That I just felt like I got a lot out of these particular works. So, mm-hmm. And it's like a little window into my brain and what shaped me as well. But I don't talk about that in the book. But you know, after I'm dead, so my grandchildren or something, maybe they'll look through all this stuff and see that it's all connected somehow. If I have grandchildren, so I have to rent some.
Well, that. something I'm kind of fascinated with right now, and kind of been discussing with other with cartoonists, is that link of cartoonists being influenced by cartoonists and bringing in other influences into that cartooning, and how you can really see the complexities develop as they bring in more influences. And kind of one of the things that really lacks for me in a lot of especially like webcomic stuff is where it's kind of more of a intertwined environment where they're influenced from each other and don't really know this outside comic world. And you kind of, you're kind of exploring that in some ways of who you've chosen and what pieces you've chosen, I've noticed, in this book, especially with the Gary Panter Adventures in Paradise, and then following up that later on with Brian Chippendale's Ninja book.
Right, and even the Paper Rad page. Mm-hmm. I've tried to pick things where there's visual connections, so that when you're, you know, it's not as obvious. I think in the first book it was more obvious, like, what the connections were, and in this one sometimes it's a little more subtle, but, like, you know, it could be something like a page composition or even, like, a panel in one person's story reminded me of a panel in another person's story. So you'll see the pages, like, close to each other or sometimes right next to each other, and I'm hoping, like, the more people explore the book, the more little visual connections they find, because they're often, like, not really obvious. And sometimes I'll read reviews, and it's clear. I mean, I thought they were more obvious than they were, but it's clear that when people read it, they're just kind of flipping through it, you know, making their cursory evaluation. But mm-hmm. I think if you spend time with the book, you start to see that it's, like, visually completely interwoven. And, you know, yeah, the point of that is that this stuff feels like it's all of a piece to me.
It, and even that paper rat example is interesting because you have it next to one of the Fletcher Hank stories, who's recently been getting a lot of attention.
Sure. If you look at the face of the villain in, like, the Fletcher Hank story, and then you look at that, like, Ben Jones character.
Yeah.
Look at the forehead and stuff. And I don't know. I'm not saying, like, necessarily that people were consciously influenced by this stuff, but I just start to see, like, visual correlations. And, you know, part of that was to sometimes make connections that happened in my brain, and maybe they're not happening in anyone else's brain, and I'm completely insane, which could be the case.
Well, you know,
I see these things, so I think that looks interesting next to that.
Ben Jones would have read the Raws, guaranteed. Like, there's no way he did not read those, so he would have read the original
sure,
story.
Sure, I mean, like, we're all influenced by this stuff without even knowing it. Like, I mean, God knows how much. Sometimes I look at things, and I don't even realize, like, how much I've been ripping it off, you know? It's just, like, certain things kind of enter your brain subtly, and then they become part of your own visual vocabulary, and you kind of don't even know where it came from. So, you know, it's not to say, like, the stories in the book are, like, you know, this influenced that directly or even indirectly. Maybe in some cases, like, the artists have no actual connection other than, like, something I noticed, mm-hmm. but I can only go with, you know, my reaction to it. So,
well, there's interesting stylistic aesthetics, I guess. Like, you have the Ron Ricci story right after that, which is bookended by a couple of Sunday strips. And Ron Ricci definitely does not draw like a Sunday strip. Ron Ricci's style is very...
He composes like those Sunday strip guys.
Exactly. It's that layout he utilizes where he takes full advantage of the page in telling his story.
Right, and even the way he organizes color. I mean, you know, there's also that kind of inventive breaking away from some of the traditions of the page. That, I mean, where people were doing that in the early days of the Sunday comics, and, you know, I kind of, in a way, put Ron Ricci in that tradition, too, where he kind of makes you rethink the page, where he treats it like a canvas, almost.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's, it's not necessarily like something like that you would directly see, like, that looks just like that, but to me it's more like the feel you get, or you know, like I said, it's sort of like there's a similarity in the way they approach the page as this, like, canvas to work on, and so there's a, to me, like, a similarity in approaching composition that way, or, you know, even seeing the page as a composition.
Well, even in what he's saying, like, Ron has a really, like, I guess, ethereal kind of dreamlike quality to his storytelling, too, mm-hmm. which works very well in that aspect as well.
Yeah, it just, to me, like, he sort of, when I put his stuff next to, like, an old Sunday comic, it doesn't feel out of place to me. So, and I mean that as a compliment to him. So, you know, there's something that I see, like, it just kind of makes you, his stuff always makes me, like, rethink a lot of about comics and what I think I know about them. And you know, I get the same feeling sometimes from some of these more experimental Sunday comics as well. So it was just kind of connecting him to that, like, you know, these cartoonists that really see the entire composition. And at the same time, there's, like, a density to his work that's also there in those Sunday comics. So, you know, it just, to me, they just kind of fit next to each other. And then, you know, there's the whole thing with the stories about math and dreams. And so the comics around it are kind of about engineering and dreams. And I don't know, I just tried to kind of put them in an order where, like, they kind of flow into each other.
Mm-hmm. And then you get into a lot of the newer folks coming up in there, which I was quite delighted to have. Vanessa Davis is someone I've really been quite enjoying her stuff by, and I'm eagerly awaiting her Drawn and Quarterly book whenever that comes out. I think it's
she's really good.
Some of the other folks in here, like that Laura Park, someone who doesn't even really have anything published yet, except for a handful of minis, I guess.
Right. Well, I've seen her work for a long time. So
being in Chicago,
so it, you know, she's very talented, and there was something about that page that had this, I don't know, inexplicable charm to me, because I'm always quoting it in my head, and it's really strange how things like that can, you know, get stuck in your brain. So I really like the way she draws. She has, like, this amazing sketchbook. I mean, she's completely crazy, I'll say that. Saying that. So she's an interesting person. But, you know, there's something came through in that page that, like, you know, really felt like, I don't know, captured something about the person that made that. And at the same time, there was a section on diary comics. And so I liked that was just kind of like one day, one or two days in there. So she's just kind of in that section of diary comics, and there's kind of sketchbook comics as well in there. So I thought, you know, like I said, there's something about her drawing that always struck me, and like her kind of sensibility. So I just wanted to include her in the book, even though, like you said, there isn't, I think there's more stuff published now, but it's like in little anthologies and things like that. But I don't know, it's just one of those things where I just happened to like it, and I thought it fit very well with the other comics around it. And I mean, I was just trying to show, like, that you could use comics to just kind of document your life. And, I mean, there's that James McShane comic that's just, like, every 10 minutes. You know, there's different approaches. And then Jeffrey Brown's are more kind of, like, looking back at a particular time. Joe Matt also, but, like, in a more humorous kind of structure. So it was, I was trying to show, like, these different ways of approaching comics as diary and comics as sketchbooks. And, you know, as documents of your life, that, you know, it doesn't, there's not like one way to do that. There's different ways of approaching. Even within that approach, there's little stylistic differences of how you could do it. And I think there's a whole section in there where it's about really specific times and places. Even though some of the stories were fictional and some were autobiographical, there's like a huge chunk of pages that might be like 80 or 100 pages of the book that's like about specific times, specific places.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, like, I didn't even really care if it was fictional or autobiographical or whatever percentage of the two as a combination. It just felt like, you know, these were comics that really tried to capture a time and a place very specifically. And that's, I think that you can, you know, like, again, you can do that even if it's fictional or, you know, a memoir or whatever. So, you know, it was kind of like finding similar things, but also the way people vary, their approaches within the same kind of parameter.
Tell me about the aesthetic choice of, which I really love, the fact that you'd like with Laura's piece and Jeffrey's piece, you'd scan in the actual, like, or I guess take an image of the sketchbook that it was in. Instead of just plain old reprinting pages.
Actually, like, in the first book, I had asked Jeff what he wanted to do, and he said, like, why don't we do it this way? Because he had printed his comics that way. I mean, actually, that's what they look like.
Mm-hmm.
So those are kind of I mean, they're not direct copies from his sketchbooks, but his sketchbooks look like that.
Yeah.
To kind of make it look sharper, it's sort of his facsimile of his what his stuff really looks like, because he does draw them in a sketchbook, which was amazing to me. I thought, you know, he does the pages in order, and so like when he's done, he has a sketchbook that when he prints his books, it's actually like a facsimile of a sketchbook. And we were trying to get even one step closer to that, where you can see that it's inside an actual book. And with Laura Parks, that is a direct scan from her sketchbook. That page is never printed anywhere other than directly from that sketchbook.
The old
mouse. So with some things that, you know, you really they almost kind of need that. I mean, I think you know, Jeff's work could be presented in a different way, and I thought about because his books are smaller, about ganging up his panels, but
like you did with the John Porcellino stuff.
I did that with John's stuff because that seemed to work okay, but there's something about, you know, Jeff's pages where like it felt, because he does draw them in a sketchbook, kind of in the order that they're going to appear. I wanted to kind of capture that, and that was with John's stuff. It seemed okay. Like when I put those together, because you know it's like he does it on white paper. So mm-hmm. Then I'm printing it on white paper. You can't really tell you're looking at a mini comic anymore. So that in that case, it seemed better to just kind of gang them up. I mean, you know, it's. And also, you don't want to keep using the same little trick for every single person. So, you know, you try to make each one kind of visually distinct somehow.
I'm going to take a quick song break because we're at about 22, the end of our hour. So we'll be right back. CITR 101.9 FM, the Sitting Studs, and I'm joined by Mr. Ivan Brunetti. We'll be right back.
Let us make a record for my Lord. Let us make a record for my Lord. Come on, let's make a record for my Lord. Let's make a record for my Lord. Prophet Isaiah made a record for my Lord. Prophet Isaiah made a record for my Lord. Ezekiel made a record for my Lord. Ezekiel made a record for my Lord. Cause let's make a record for my Lord. Let's make a record for my Lord. I want to make a record for my Lord. Hallelujah. Come on, let's make a record. I want to make a record for my Lord. Make a record for my Lord. I want to make a record for my Lord. Don't you want to make a record for my Lord? Don't you want to make a record for my Lord? Holy, 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 my God. Come on, let's make a record. Give up the word. Give up Lucifer. He's no good. A demon. A lying one. Let's make a record for my Lord. Come on, let's make a record for my Lord. He done made a record for my Lord. He done made a record for my Lord. I said, he done made a record for my Lord. He done made a record for my Lord. Don't you want to make a record for my Lord? Don't you want to make a record for my Lord? Well, I'm gonna make a record for my Lord. I'm gonna make a record for my Lord. Hallelujah. Glory. Hosanna. Hosanna. Hey, Lord, Lord. I want to make a record for my Lord. Want to make a record for my Lord. Come on, let's make a record. For my Lord, let's make a record for my Lord. Praise Him, praise Him, praise Him, hallelujah. Praise Him, praise Him.
CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Inkstud Show. I thought I'd do a quick rundown of some of the shows we got coming up here on the Inkstuds, because this is my last live week for the year. I have a bunch of pre-recorded to play over the rest of the year that have not been played yet. So next week will be a wonderful conversation with Rutu Modan, who's books, Exit Wounds and Gemology, are both fantastic and everyone should read them. Week after, I'll be posting up an interview with Robert Gooden, and the week after that with Matt Forsyth on CITR the 25th and the 1st. They'll be doing some pre-recorded Christmassy music on the 25th, and then I don't know what they have planned on the 1st, but it won't be playing on air. You'll have to go to inkstuds.com to check it out, but on the radio you can hear this wonderful interview we did with Rudu, who I was very, very happy to talk to. And in the new year, on the 8th, I'll be doing an interesting, I'm hoping it works out well, roundtable discussion of the year in comics featuring Paul Gravett, Tom Spurgeon, and Douglas Walk. I'm hoping it works out well. It's always hard with three guests over the phone, but I think with those folks, we can get it going, so... I am talking to my guest this week, Ivan Brunetti. Now, you
can I make one quick comment?
Please do.
You know, just called one of the cartoonists crazy in the book. I mean that in a good way. Like, I love work that's obsessive and, you know, a little bit off kilter. And, you know, like, I meant that as a compliment. The worst thing for me is, like, bland competent, you know, like just something that's competent and bland. I'm like, yeah, it's good, but I kind of like some, you know, things that, I mean, that's, I think, a big part of, like, both of those books. It's, you know, you can probably see, like, the kind of stuff that I like is has an obsessive quality, or, you know, like I said, it's kind of a reflection, maybe, of myself.
So. Laura's work, it's very tight, complicated, filled with whimsy. Is that a good way of putting it?
Yeah, it is. It is. I mean, it's actually, like, that's an old page. Like, she's done some really nice color stuff in her new sketchbook, but I just was apologizing because she's throwing words out there like she's nuts. But, I mean, like, that's actually what's good about it, you know?
She's not Dave Sim nuts.
No, I meant that, like, kind of just kind of a good kind of nutty, which I hopefully describes me as well. So,
I think that would go well with the majority of cartoonists whose work I love and admire.
Yeah, no, that's what's good. I mean, maybe we're losing that a little bit with, like, you know, a lot of the stuff coming out and kind of comics getting legitimate in a way. Like, we're losing, like, the... like all the crazy people that would get into comics, you know, 25 years ago, where you really had to be obsessed with it. And, you know, I mean, now it's become much more like of a mainstream thing. And so, you know, sometimes I miss the old days where it just attracted people that, like,
the ink was in their blood,
part of that, you know?
Well, I think, you know, and that's the interesting is, like, you have people kind of focused on publishing stuff like that now, though, like, where you, before you had a handful of publishers, but now, like, Picture Box is all about the, I guess, the less mainstream focused.
This is the best time ever, don't get me wrong. There's more stuff available now than ever before. I mean, it's like a dream come true. So,
maybe, I guess the question is, would folks who we love and admire from days of yore get the same acclaim now?
Sometimes I wonder if they would, but I think so, because there was just something about their work that made it stand out then, you know. And I think that's the stuff that lasts. Like, it has to have something more than just whatever it got a claim at some point. You know, there has to be a real, some kind of kernel of honesty or something really genuine about the work that has to exist beyond the page somewhat, you know, or beyond that artist.
Well, I think for every... Robert Crumb and Kim Deitch and Bill Griffith, there's, you know, hundreds of underground folks whose stuff is just not interesting at all. And I've seen...
No, but then you have people like Rory Hayes that, you know, is so kind of like almost like an outsider to the whole thing, but has had a huge influence, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, even though he's, you know, draws in a very different way, I don't know, I think it's good to just... have all this stuff out there and just let, you know, you can't decide, like, what's going to be important or liked 20 years later, and that changes all the time anyway. Things get lost and rediscovered and reassessed all the time, you know. I have no magic crystal ball, or, you know, no one does, so you just kind of have to go with your intuitive faculties and just, you know, like, here are things that are feel compelling to me. I don't know why all the time. Can't always articulate it. But maybe that's good. If you can fully articulate something, it takes away maybe what's powerful or compelling about it, you know? So, I don't know.
Now, one of the most interesting things in comics coming out right now is something you're involved in, beyond the Anthology of Graphic Fiction, Cartoons, and True Stories, Volume 2 from Yale Book Press, is Kramer's Urgot, Book 7.
I haven't seen it yet. I'm going to see it on Saturday.
You must be excited.
I am. I'm really curious to see it. My page is the most boring page in the book, I'm sure. I did like the most boring page. I thought there should be something in there that was really boring. So,
well, I think if it was boring, it wouldn't have made it in. So I'll beg to differ. For as I want to understand, it was definitely, it wasn't one of those, you give Sammy something and you get in. It's a, you make the cut. So
yeah, I guess I feel like I made the team.
All right. I'm the Bat Boy. No, it is a fantastic collection. You're going to be doing a signing, I guess. I can't read the poster.
It's Saturday. That's when Saturday. I'm going to see the book for the first time, yeah.
Is that at Quimby's or is it Chicago?
Chicago Comics.
There we go. Not Quimby's, Chicago Comics. As well as, I guess, Chris Ware will be there, Sammy Harkham, Ron Ricci, Souther Salazar. Who else? A whole slew of
Carol
Tyler. I don't
know. Ron going to be there. I think Anders Nilsson and Carol Tyler, who I've never actually met. There were a few other people too. I don't have a flyer, but it was like 8 or 9 cartoonists, maybe 10 cartoonists. So,
oh, you know what?
Be interesting.
I found the listing. You, John Hankovich, Sammy Harkham, Kevin Isenga, Ted May, Anders, Ron Ricci, John Pham, but I don't think John's going to be there because he told me he's going elsewhere. Pishaw, yeah, Ron and Souther Salazar and Ben Jones. Oh, no, I'm looking at the wrong one. Sorry, let me redo that.
I was thinking, is Ron really going to be there? We're going to waste too much time. Nobody in nobody's going to drive over there from listening. So
that was the, no, it's going to be you, John, Sammy, Kevin, Ted May, Anders, Ron Ricci, Souther Salazar, Carol Tyler, Chris, and Dan Zetwalk. There we go.
Okay, that sounds right, yeah.
But Ron is definitely going because I know he's on the whole
tour. I didn't even know. I haven't even really looked at the flyer. I just know I'm supposed to be there. So,
it's a mammoth book, though. So tell me a little bit about the strip that you have in it.
Oh, well, it's just basically about finding out I had, you know, diabetes. So, and it's about my work day, which was, it's like me in my office, which is what I did during the day, and then at night I teach. So none of that, I don't know if people could figure that out from the strip, but it was like my life turned upside down. So that's why I felt like the rug was pulled out from under me, which is why I have to flip the whole unwieldy book upside down. There's lots of images of things falling over, and it felt like it was the whole idea of the strip was just kind of like a metaphor that you have to turn it around is like a metaphor for what the main character is kind of going through through the whole strip. The main character being myself.
You may have people cursing you for flipping the book.
Oh, that's fine. I kind of wanted it to feel like a really difficult thing to do. So,
well, I guess what you'll do is you'll put it on a table and then like walk around the table to read the rest or something.
I guess so. I wanted to get a sense. Like the whole strip is about not being able to deal with the physical world, you know, and like all the things that go wrong with our physical selves, and like through the whole thing, there's like an inability to deal with reality, and like the material world feeling kind of heavy and impossible to negotiate. So that's kind of what the story is about. So and it kind of is in half, you know, it's kind of divided in half, and I wanted to flip it. I also drew it at different times too, so it was like one half of it felt different than the other half. So I don't know, it just at some point it was like it'd be better if you have to flip the whole book because it felt like what the character was going through in the story. So it was just kind of a way to metaphorically get the reader to feel the same things the character in the story is feeling. I'm talking about it as if it's another person, but the main character is myself. So, But it, you know, it is a character in the end. So I don't know what else to say about it.
No,
it looks like it's like an artificial sweetener package. The colors, so it's modeled after the saccharin packages.
Oh, because of the diabetes.
So I use the same. It looks like bubble gum, and you know, the whole thing's about kind of revolves around this diabetic thing. So.
Well, I'll make sure to get it to Colin to read.
I just explained the whole strip for everybody. Everybody's like, yeah, whatever. Don't have to read it. There's some painful personal confessions in there, though.
We'll leave that for the unveiling for those that plunk down the cash, which is well worth it. It's a fantastic-looking book. I haven't seen a hand copy, but I've seen the digital copy, and it's one of the most impressive things I've seen coming out in comics for a while.
Yeah, I'm really glad they did it. This is going to, it's like one for the ages.
Yeah. It's going to go up there with my Raw books.
Yeah.
And the other thing you did, I guess it was in the summer or in the spring, I can't remember, is you did something in Vegas?
Oh, yeah, actually that...
Or is it still
I
up?
I actually did that in December and January, November, December, and January of last year, and then it was unveiled in February. And it's still up. It's... they had this thing where they were going to have 50 banners in the old part of Vegas, the downtown Vegas, and you know, it was around a certain theme, and I basically got talked into sending in a proposal, which I didn't even want to do at the time because I was so busy, but luckily I did. So thanks Michael Ogilvie, who's the person who works for the city of Vegas, who convinced me to do this. And you know, I had a, since it was around the idea of thirst. That was the theme, and they wanted to do 50 banners. It kind of, you know, the way they were going to be laid out is it kind of took you in a circle around that area. So I just started to think of it in like a, as a circular comic strip. So I just did a sequence of 50 images. So basically, it was like a 50-panel wordless comic to me that was just going to be blown up really big so that you could start at any point and kind of go all the way around and keep coming back around. You know, I tried to think about how people would experience it, which would be kind of mostly through driving. There's not a lot of walking.
Mm-hmm.
In that part, or Vegas in general, but so I wanted the graphics to be really simple, where you could decode them in a split second if you were kind of driving 20 miles an hour or whatever, you know, like, and maybe like you wouldn't even notice it was a story until you saw enough of them. There's also like a glow-in-the-dark part of them too, which is really kind of strange. I don't know if you can't really see that unless you're there.
Yeah.
And they glow. The weird thing is it glows more during the day than in the dark. Which is really strange, but so that was another way to highlight a particular part of each. I'm calling them panels, but they're banners.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so yeah, the whole thing was that it's kind of telling a story, and there's also inside jokes. Like I put the mayor of Vegas in there as a character. So
no,
he was a character. I met him. He has a cameo appearance in the movie Casino, playing himself. So, anyway, but yeah, that was, I mean, it was a fun project to work on.
It sounds fascinating. I've looked at some of the images on the blog Flumer. That,
yeah, there's actually, it's probably hard to find it, but if you can probably do a search for it. And somewhere in the city of Las Vegas, they have a department of, I don't know if it's cultural or arts or something. There's, you can see all 50 banners in sequence, so there is somewhere on the web where you can see the whole string.
I'll find out and link it.
It's almost like an animation when you look through it. Well, the other thing in there, too, was, and this is probably, I was influenced by Saul Steinberg, that this great mural, which was kind of based on this one line, this horizontal line that became like a horizon. He kind of just played with what a horizontal line would be. You know, it was reprinted in one of his books. I can't remember now if it was in The Passport or Art of Living. But anyway, it was originally a mural. And I thought about, like, well, since people are going to be driving past this, you need something to anchor them. So most of the panels have the same exact kind of, the line of the ground is always the same. It's in the same spot. And there's only a couple of panels where it breaks from that, just to get a little visual variety going on. But it was something like where I wanted people to, you know, I was interested in visualizing that, like you're going to see it in perspective. And even from far away, you could kind of tell maybe that you were looking at a story. So it's kind of playing with that same ground. The ground, the baseline of the strips is kind of the same of the panels and through most of them, with only a couple of exceptions where there's tight close-ups.
It's the connecting tissue.
Yeah, it was just, you know, again, I was just kind of, I mean, it's kind of a whimsical story. There's sort of some points in there, but I don't know. It was just kind of just taking the opportunity to play around with that. You know, that's an unusual opportunity to design 50 banners that people are going to be driving past. So,
one of the more unusual comics that one can come across.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it didn't have to be a comic. It's just that I decided to approach it as if it were.
Mm-hmm. Well, I am, unfortunately, at the end of my allotted time slot here at CITR. It's the next show is standing in the hallway staring at me. So thank you so much for talking with me today, Ivan.
Oh, well, thanks for having me on.
And as always, I'm excited to see work by you, even if it's a small snippet here and there. And
I will be getting more done next year, I promise. So, I'm working on things as we speak.
Do you get the summer off now that you're teaching?
I do get the summers off, so I'm
there
hoping to, you know, get some real drawing done.
Well, thank you so much, and I'm envious of your students. There we go.
Oh, well, they all hate me.
The red pen of doom.
Yeah, I think they think of me as being very, very critical, which I don't think I am, but, you know...
Well,
I have my faults. What can I say?
You could always, yeah. No, I think it's
I do tell embarrassing stories about myself all the time. That's probably the best part of class. They know a lot about me.
Well, if it's anything like your comics, I'm sure it's.
There's told them stuff.
Plenty to be told.
Most of them don't even know what I do. It's kind of liberating in a way. Like it's just they just think I'm some doddering old man.
Well, that's good. It's not like the. Go into the SVA and it's like, oh, I've got my class with Panter, and then I've got my class with Mazzucchelli, and then I've got my class with Spiegelman.
Yeah, they're like, who's this guy? I don't know, he's just nuts. Crazy old man.
Oh, I've got Brunetti next class. Okay, well, thank you so much, Ivan, and yeah, have a swell evening.
You too.
All okay.
Right, well, thanks again.
Thanks.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
That was Ivan Brunetti, and once, as always, I'm happy to have him on. He was on before, 2 years ago, talking about the first collection from Yale Press, the anthology of graphic fiction, cartoons, and true stories, and the second one pleases me as well. They're both wonderful books, and if you're in Chicago, go to Chicago Comics on Saturday and say hi. And, yeah, Crimes and Treasons is up next.